You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the herb.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, July 25th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program, and I have a big announcement for you today because we are drastically cutting back here at the Marijuana Agenda. And first, let me thank everyone who's been big-time supporters of this show, who followed me for years and years and have contributed to the show. Appreciate each and every one of you, but reality is intruding in my life, and I need to spend more time doing some other endeavors lately. So I'm having to cut back on the time that I dedicate to this podcast to just 1 half hour a day. So yeah, we're going to cut back from 2 hours a day just a half hour a day. But the goal here is in not just providing myself some more time in my life, but also to produce a more streamlined podcast that I hope will generate more listeners. I'm afraid too many people look at the show and they see 2 hours sitting there and they go, oh my God, that's way too much time. So we're going to cut down to 30 minutes and see how that affects our subscribers, see how that affects our listener base. And I hope it provides a more streamlined and compact show for you to listen to. It also means far fewer advertising breaks. We're just going to take 2 minutes out of every 30-minute podcast to pay the bills here. So thanks so much for your understanding and recognizing that I'm still dedicated to this mission. I still want to provide you the daily cannabis headline news, a daily interview with the organizations that are making a mark in the marijuana movement and marijuana industry, and my drug war data mining and radical rants, stupid stoner stories, reefer madness debunked. Those will all continue. We'll just spread them out throughout the half hour podcast. We'll also have Herb Thrasher showing up for our Reefer Rock review every Friday. So thanks again for your support, and I hope you enjoy the new podcast format. For today's show, in our cannabis headline news, we've got some news about Attorney General Jeff Sessions. In our Sensible Future segment with SSDP, we visit with Vilmarie Narlock, who talks about Jeff Sessions and his love of the 1980s relic drug abuse resistance education. And then in the Radical Rant, I'll tell you about Prohibition Reframing 101, how to take existing drug policy and use it to fight for marijuana law reform. But first, the news.
This is your cannabis headline news, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Tuesday, July 25th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. A report in the Daily Beast details the meeting schedule of Attorney General Jeff Sessions in the time before and after his recusal from oversight in the investigation of Russian collusion that led to the appointment of Special Counsel William Mueller. Within that schedule, the report notes, quote, a phone call with Kevin Sabet, a former Obama administration official and leading opponent of legalizing marijuana, end quote, that took place just before lunch on March 3rd. On March 2nd, the day of Sessions' recusal announcement at 4 p.m., he had met earlier with three representatives from the Fraternal Order of Police to discuss, quote, asset forfeiture reform, sentencing reform, and drug legalization, and other criminal justice issues, end quote. Sabet would not disclose any details of the phone call with the Daily Beast. He was also one of the few non-governmental representatives Sessions met with during that tumultuous week. The latest tweet storm from President Donald Trump gives further credence to rumors that Attorney General Sessions may not be in that position much longer. On Monday, Trump refers to Sessions as, quote, our beleaguered attorney general, followed by tweets today that claim Sessions took, quote, a very weak position, end quote, regarding Trump's allegations of criminal conduct by his rival Hillary Clinton. Trump last week had declared that he would not have offered the job of attorney general if he had known Sessions would recuse himself in the Russian collusion investigation, something Sessions only did after pressure from Senator Al Franken forced Sessions to admit under oath that he had spoken with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. The Washington Post reports that some believe Trump is angling for a Sessions replacement who would follow his orders to fire the Robert Mueller, the special counsel investigating Trump's Russian entanglements, with some who believe the next attorney general could be Senator Ted Cruz or Mayor Rudy Giuliani. An aide to Senator Cruz told a New York Times reporter the story is, quote, false, while Giuliani on CNN said there was, quote, no truth to the story. A spokeswoman for the Maine Department of Labor tells the Portland Press Herald that her state's adult-use marijuana laws are, quote, an outlier for their protections of marijuana users' employment rights. Julie Rabinowitz, the director of policy, operations, and communications, lamented that most employers will be forced to prove that a marijuana-using employee was actually impaired on the job in order to fire an employee for a positive drug test. Without stricter laws from the legislature, she complained, quote, Maine risks more employers leaving the state, end quote. Rabinowitz also stated that workers subject to losing their employment over the detection of inactive marijuana metabolites in their urine, which make up about 91% of all workplace drug test positives, should, quote, stop thinking of drug testing as something punitive, end quote. Instead, she said, without any reference to supporting studies, that drug testing, quote, incentivize employees, especially those in recovery, to stay clean, and that, quote, drug testing somehow promotes a safer work environment for all workers, end quote. While arrests for drug possession, production, trafficking, and distribution of most drugs have been on the increase since 2010 in Canada, for the fifth straight year, cannabis-related offenses have declined. Lyft News reports that cannabis offenses still make up 58% of the arrests for drugs in Canada, despite declines in all provinces but Prince Edward Island and New Brunswick. Arrests held steady in the province of Quebec. Over three-quarters of all cannabis arrests in Canada are for mere possession of the herb. Arrests for young people for cannabis were down by 15% in 2016. The Canadian government is currently in the progress of legalizing marijuana for all adults as of July 2018, with provinces discussing age limits ranging from 18 to 21. A new cannabis nonprofit advocating for medical marijuana use in sports made its debut in Denver during a kickball game sponsored by 420 Games. The new group, Athletes for Care, is featured in a story in The Cannabist and profiles former NFL offensive lineman Eben Britton and tight end Nate Jackson. The group was founded by Ryan Kingsbury, a former executive for Denver's CW Hemp, a company manufacturing and selling cannabidiol oil that it claims can be shipped legally to any state in the country, regardless of DEA statements that cannabidiol is a Schedule I controlled substance. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Tuesday, July 25th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Please help support my independent cannabis radio journalism by becoming a patron of The Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll keep our free live YouTube show on the air and receive your own private podcast feed of the first hour. For just $9.99, you'll receive both hours of the show and special downloads only available for VIPs. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
This is A Sensible Future, brought to you by Students for Sensible Drug Policy at ssdp.org. Drug policy is an issue that primarily affects the young, both in terms of use and legal prosecution. SSDP believes in honest education about drugs and advocates for harm reduction policies to protect young adults and society at large. We speak with another dedicated activist from SSDP, working toward a sensible future.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of A Sensible Future, the podcast for students for sensible drug policy at ssdp.org. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today, we have Vilmarie Narlock. She's talking to us from Chicago, Illinois today. And Vilmarie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Russ. Thanks for having me.
Tell our listeners how you got involved with SSDP.
Sure. I've been involved since 2009 as a student in my doctoral program for clinical psychology at Roosevelt University. So I was a research assistant there at the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy, and the director, my boss, Kathy Kane Willis, happened to be the advisor of the SSDP chapter there. So since I was working for her there, she sort of encouraged me to join the chapter as well, and I've been a happy member since.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, I was interested in getting you on the podcast today because of recent comments we heard from Attorney General Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. And I don't know how much longer he'll be our Attorney General, given some of the recent tweets from President Trump.
But, I know.
Yeah, Attorney General Sessions, I've often told listeners, is pretty much a throwback to the 1980s Just Say No era, the era I came up in and don't want to return us to by any means. Tell us your thoughts on Jeff Sessions and his recent call to return to the DARE program, the Drug Abuse Resistance Education. What did you think about that?
Yeah, well, you know, when I heard that he was going to be speaking at this DARE event, honestly, my initial thought was, well, of course he is, you know?
Then
reading his comments, you know, what he actually said, I was, you know, it was a little bit scary hearing things like, you know, law enforcement is prevention, you know, and just statements like this are really scary. And really, like you said, a throwback to an era that, I don't think any of us want to go back to when it comes to drug education. As I think many people know, the DARE program was ineffective and proven so in many, many studies. So for him to sort of outright say that it worked is just false.
So the way he tries to defend that is by looking at the statistics of self-reported drug use throughout the 1980s, which did show a decline. So how do we respond to that? You know, good-meaning people that hear this and know that, well, I know DARE didn't work, but how do we explain that drug use went down?
Well, you know, I think it's sort of a thing where there's a lot of other services. You know, people are thinking more in terms of general health and wellness, you know, more mental health support for young people started happening then. So I think there are so many other factors that come into play there. And I think another, argument that I've been hearing coming down the pipeline is that there's a different version of DARE. And actually, it's not DARE. The program is called Keeping It Real, which is just silly, but it's a program that was adopted by DARE in 2009. The program itself was reviewed about 2006, and even at that point, didn't get very good scores if we're looking at something like the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, their national register for effective or evidence-based programs and practices, which is sort of like what a lot of people will go to find out if something is evidence-based and effective. So the Keeping It Real program that they're now trying to say, like, oh, but this is what we do, they probably shouldn't really be pushing that so much either, because it's not so great.
Kind of the kinder, gentler form of DARE. And so what do do, Vilmarie, in this case, where obviously drugs is something that's a reality in society, and we want to steer children away from them or to make better choices if they use them. So what sort of education is going to work for the kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really important thing to look at. And I did my dissertation on drug education and what young people thought about it. And generally what they're looking for is they're wanting someone, and I will say it's really important to actually talk to young people about what they want and what they think works. So that's one thing, is actually including young people in the development of any sort of program that's going to be talking at them, you know. So actually talking to the young people, they're wanting people who are knowledgeable about drugs, so professionals in the field, maybe doctors or medical professionals who really know what they're talking about to be delivering this information. not necessarily their teachers, who don't really have the time to go through all this intensive training, right? And they're wanting, you know, young people to talk to and people that they feel comfortable talking to about these issues. If they do know a family member or a friend who they're concerned about, they want to be able to talk about that without fear of getting in trouble in school. So,
right.
You know, we need more compassion. We need, you know, involvement of young people in the development. And we need reality, you know. We know that young people use drugs, and, you know, we need to look at it from a harm reduction and public health perspective.
So not police officers are the people they want to talk to.
Yeah, no one really seems to think that, you know, in the work that I've seen, young people don't necessarily want to see a police officer talking to them about this, and, you know, especially nowadays.
Well, for people that subscribe to Jeff Sessions' mode of thinking and think that there's a role for law enforcement in that, what would your response be to them as far as young people and criminal consequences for their drug use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there are really significant consequences for young people using drugs because of the policies that exist. In some places, there are zero tolerance policies. So if they get caught with or even find out that they've been using drugs on their school property, they can get expelled. And certainly, we don't want to take away a young person's education and their opportunities for a positive future. And that's the kind of thing that happens when law enforcement is involved in this kind of thing.
So are there specific programs at SSDP that are addressing this need for education in the middle schools or the high school levels, or does it just start at the college level?
Yeah, I'm actually really glad you asked that. So we have, I've been working on our Just Say No, and that's KNOW as in knowledge, peer education, harm reduction and drug education program. And although it is sort of tailored for our college students to be able to talk to their peers, we do have high school chapters that are working on being trained to do this. And I have been getting some interest from other high schools and middle schools to tailor the program to that level. So there are a couple of opportunities that I'm sort of working on to bring our program to a younger age group as well.
And with this with these new programs, are there also considerations as far as policies that we're trying to adopt in the schools with respect to reporting overdoses or anything that the kids might having or young adults might have to deal with in a college setting?
Absolutely, yeah. So a lot of our students are working on or have, you know, been able to get Good Samaritan or medical amnesty policies on their campus in the books for their drug and alcohol policy. So in general, what that means is if, you know, you're on campus and a friend of yours is experiencing a medical emergency related to drug use, you can call for help without fear of getting in trouble. Sometimes there'll be some educational component to it, to where if you do call for help or something like this, you'll maybe be referred to for counseling or something like that. But you wouldn't have the punishment such as being expelled or kicked out of your dorm or things like this.
And what
so
about
really
policies?
Encouraging people. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt, but also wondering about how things have evolved now that we have 8 states where the college students that are 21 and above in those states can legally consume cannabis.
Yes, so this is still an issue and definitely something that our students are working on. There's been students and chapters that have been working on equalization policies. So in other words, treating cannabis like alcohol on campus so that the same type of penalty that they would receive for alcohol would apply to cannabis. So oftentimes with alcohol, there'll be like a 3 strikes kind of thing, or they'll have more opportunities for support, whereas with cannabis, it's an immediate, you know, penalty that they would receive. So some things that they're working on is trying to equalize that at least. And, you know, in other words, otherwise it seems to be pretty tricky because of things like the Drug-Free Schools Act. Colleges and universities are a little hesitant to allow things like smoking cannabis on campus, even for medicinal use. So that's something that our students are up against and trying to work on and trying to, you know, find some common ground to work from with administrations.
I see. Well, Ville-Marie Narlock, this is a developing situation with respect to the drug education. Again, like we said, we don't even know if Jeff Sessions will be around by the time this interview airs, much less over the next the rest of the administration. But it's good to know the folks at SSDP are paying attention to this and coming up with effective, practical education that will actually work for the kids. Anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with? Maybe some contact information or other informational sites that would help them out on this subject?
Absolutely. If you're interested in checking out our program, you can go to ssdp.org/justsayno. And again, that's no with the K-N-O-W. And you can find all of our materials there, find out more, and my contact info is there as well.
Well, thanks so much, Ville-Marie, for joining us today on A Sensible Future.
Thanks so much, Russ. Have a great day.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I reject the idea that we're going to be better placed if we have more marijuana.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
Federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill. That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
I was reading one of the recent missives from the folks at Project Samuel that lamented that construction employers in Colorado are forced to bring in workers from out of state because they can't find enough applicants in Colorado who can pass a drug test. Wah! Cue the world's tiniest violin. When I read stories like this, there's a special setting in my brain that reframes the narrative from the point of view of adults like us who enjoy marijuana responsibly. In this example, it's not that employers can't find drug-free workers. It's that too many Colorado employers continue discriminating against employees who are enjoying their constitutional right to marijuana. Another way to reframe is to juxtapose the marijuana story being told with some other roughly analogous drug or activity that highlights the absurdity and cruelty of prohibition. Can you believe this story coming out of Colorado? I might begin. Construction companies down there are bringing in out-of-state workers because they can't find enough guys in Colorado who don't drink beer. Yeah, they say that even if these guys drink beer after work or on the weekends, the effects of it last the next day after they got drunk. You know, a hangover. And, you know, these companies, they don't want to risk that hungover guy going and wrecking the forklift. Or how about, every other week we get some story of new parents having their infant or their toddler stolen away from them by the state Child Protective Services because it's discovered that the parents have smoked marijuana. I'd handle it like this. This is outrageous. These two young parents just had their children taken away by CPS because they got a tip that they were junk food junkies. They tested the blood of the kids and determined they had elevated levels of bad cholesterol and triglycerides. Those poor kids were subjected to their parents eating the unhealthiest food and modeling those destructive behaviors. But CPS says they can get their kids back if they convert to organic veganism and lose 40 pounds each. They sounds different when you frame it that way. Or consider the near-monthly complaint from a state that's newly legalized or considering legalization that there's going to be no way for the state troopers to be able to bust people for stone driving. Reframe it like this. You know, we got to be serious about keeping our roads safe. That's why our state troopers are going to be testing a new roadside device that determines how much sleep you've had. You breathe into it, and based on the detection of certain chemicals, they can tell whether you've had 8 hours of sleep the previous night. If you've had fewer than 8 hours sleep, you're automatically guilty of a DUI. And then, how about we look at that overblown concern about public consumption of marijuana in public clubs? That's easy to tackle. Go like this. Can you believe what they're proposing? They want to establish buildings in the city where people gather for the express purpose of taking drugs. Yes, drug-taking buildings they expect people to drive to, go inside, take drugs, get high, and then we're supposed to just trust them to judge their own level of impairment before they get back in their cars and drive home? And what happens to the local neighborhood when there's a drug-taking building nearby with druggies stumbling in and out all hours of the night? What about the kids who have to walk past the drug-taking building on their way to school? Of course, I just described every bar, saloon, tavern, pub, and nightclub in America. And there's a similar play you can make when the subject of workplace productivity comes up. I heard of this company that has decided to accommodate their employees' use of stimulant drugs. First, using company money, they have outfitted a small, self-contained stimulant lab in the break room. At any time of the day, even in the middle of work, employees addicted to stimulants can waste productive time serving themselves liquid stimulant drugs from the lab, which they can take right there in the break room or even bring back to their desk to consume. And for other stimulant users, they used company money to build an overhead shelter so that the employees who want to feed their stimulant addiction can smoke their fix outside. In fact, some of these stimulant addicts can waste up to an hour a day of paid company time feeding their drug habit. Of course, I just described every employer's coffee breaks and smoke breaks. Now look, none of these analogies are perfect, right? The coffee drinkers and the cigarette smokers aren't experiencing any sort of mind-altering effects necessarily, and the alcohol drinkers aren't hungover all the time, and the junk food junkies may not be endangering your kids, but the point is to kind of shake people out of their complacency, to be able to get them to wrap their minds around the fact that they don't have a single critical thought about the public health risks of legal drugs like alcohol, sugar, caffeine, and nicotine, but they're freaking out when that legal drug is marijuana. If you can start putting these kind of frames, take existing drug policy with respect to alcohol, sugar, caffeine, and nicotine, and then reframe whatever marijuana argument they're throwing at you. Just take the word marijuana out and throw in one of these others, and that can serve to dislodge these people, to get their brains out of the status quo thinking that those four substances, alcohol, sugar, caffeine, and nicotine, aren't drugs. And that's the real problem, is that they don't really conceive of those things as drugs. We have a completely different vocabulary and different framing whenever we're talking about alcohol, sugar, caffeine, and nicotine. People are drinkers, or they have a sweet tooth, or they like their coffee, or they're smokers. We never think of them as drug addicts, but they are. Some of them, anyway. Well, folks, that's all the time we got for today. Time flies when you legalize. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.